We should not let this go over our heads among the huge news that there is around Brexit. Good morning, by the way. Arlene Foster claims British negotiators told her the Irish government stopped Downing Street officials from showing the DUP the text of Monday's Brexit deal. Now, that is a huge claim. The Irish government have categorically said this did not happen. So who are you to believe? Both statements cannot be accurate. Both statements cannot be true. So we need to flush this out because it is highly significant and very important. If indeed it is true that the Irish government tried to block the Democratic Unionist Party, the largest unionist party in Northern Ireland, from seeing a text and behind the DUP's back, doing a deal that would affect your lives in Northern Ireland, what would that mean for the relationship between the Irish government and any political party here in Northern Ireland? If it's not accurate, why did the British negotiators tell it to Arlene Foster? Now, here's an interesting twist in this. The Nolan Show last night was in contact with Downing Street, and Downing Street are refusing to deny that British negotiators did tell the Irish government to stop the DUP seeing that text. They're refusing to comment. For you as a citizen in Northern Ireland, you need to know what happened here. And here's the number, 0303 80 55 55, if you want to feed into this. Let's just remind ourselves about precisely what Arlene Foster said around this.
We are told that the Irish government prevented it coming to us, and we have to take that at face value. But who told you that? Well, the British negotiation team.
Nelson McCausland with us today, former DUP MLA. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
There is so much happening around Brexit, Nelson, as you well know, that this could get lost in the headlines. And we don't, as a programme, think it should. Because it's one huge claim. What do you make of this?
Well, I think it's a reflection of a poor relationship now between unionism, the unionist community, and the government in Dublin. It's a reflection of the fact that ever since the summer period, when Enda Kenny stepped aside and Leo Varadkar took over, the relationship there has deteriorated. And that sort of bullish attitude that we have seen from Dublin over the months would certainly suggest to me that Dublin has adopted an attitude in the whole thing which is almost aimed at achieving the very thing that they say they don't want, a hard border. If we're going to resolve the problems and the issues that face us, or in all of this, it needs to be done on the basis of partnership, cooperation, and not confrontation.
And we will get into all of that in a moment or two. But there's this top line, this focus that we are doing on this very issue at the top of this programme this morning. It's more than just a relationship with the Irish government. Well, it asks a question, Nelson, about the relationship between the DUP and the Conservative Party, between the DUP and the British government. Because if you think this through, and it takes you 2 seconds to think it through, if the British negotiators have told Arlene Foster the truth, then the British negotiators sided with the Irish government against their partners in government, against the DUP.
Yes.
So what does that say about the relationship between the DUP and the British government? And why is the DUP putting up with it?
Well, first of all, the DUP has, I think, acted in the interest of unionism, in the interest of the union, in the interest of Ulster, and has done it very well over the last number of days. It was clear as far back as October that there could be no new border created down the Irish Sea there would be no partitioning of the United Kingdom. Northern Ireland would remain fully part of the UK. And that was made clear by Arlene Foster in October in an interview at the Conservative Party conference, reiterated by Nigel and all of the others. Now, when it came to the bit, there were people who said, oh, well, the DUP will simply back down. That didn't happen. The DUP stood their ground. If there are people in Downing Street, in the periphery of Downing Street, in the civil service, and I don't know who are the members of the negotiating team are, if that is the case that they thought they were going to deceive, mislead, misrepresent, whatever, the fact is they've learned a lesson. They learned a lesson because of the resolve of the negotiators who were there at the key point there.
But is this not bigger than what you're suggesting? And let me just follow my logic here for one moment. If the British negotiators were told by the Irish government, do not tell the DUP, it is at least worthy of a question to Theresa May, the Prime Minister. Was she aware of that demand to block the DUP out of it? And let's follow this one final step. The British negotiators then had a decision to make. The British government had a decision to make. Did they side with the Irish government and keep, if indeed this did happen, and the Irish government categorically denied this happened, but let's follow the logic if it did happen. The British negotiators then had a decision to make. Did they follow the demand of the Irish government, or do they tell the party which is keeping them in government?
I think most senior...
And if they did indeed decide to block the DUP out of this, why is the DUP continuing to keep the Tory party in government?
Well, I think that last one is a rather ironic question to ask, because most people understand quite clearly that the DUP is in an influential position and it is able to look after the interests of Northern Ireland as it did on Monday. Now, the question for me, as much as anything, is why did Dublin, even though they deny it, there is a general belief that in the Unionist community that Dublin is being aggressive and unhelpful and antagonistic towards Northern Ireland. The other thing, of course, many Unionists would have a view on is this, that down through the years, we have seen parties which have been Conservative and Unionist parties, and Theresa May was very clear when she took over in office. She was standing on the steps of Downing Street saying she was the leader of the Conservative and Unionist Party, and she also emphasised the integrity and entirety of the United Kingdom, including Northern Ireland. However, having said that, we have learned, I think, down through the years, Northern Ireland, that you treat all of the assurances that you get from London with just a pinch of salt. So we are where we are. Now, let's look at how we get things back on track. I think you could spend a lot of time nitpicking over the who said what to who and who said why and when and all the rest of it. We've been told by Arlene Foster the position that was intimated to her. I'm not sure we'll ever get much beyond that.
Yeah, but you know, who said what? This is not playground stuff, who said what, who didn't. DUP were blocked out of this at the behest of the Irish government, if they were, then what else is the DUP not being told? Then what other negotiations are happening by the British government behind the DUP's back? This was not a minor matter about some minor technicality in Northern Ireland. The suggestion that Arlene Foster is publicly making is that the British government blocked a key piece of text that would have affected all of our lives in Northern Ireland at the behest of the Irish government, and the DUP are saying that they were trying to have got to see that text for 5 weeks. Now, let's bring in Mairead McGuinness, who's the Fine Gael MEP. Good morning to you, Mairead.
Good morning to you, and good morning to Nelson.
Good morning. So the Irish government emphatically denied this happened. If the Irish government are right in this, why have the British negotiators said this if it didn't happen? And why is Downing Street refusing to say this did not happen? Why are they saying no comment?
Well, I suppose I could ask the question, why are you asking me? And I think I agree, funnily enough, with a great deal of what Nelson has said in the latter comments there. There is an awful lot in your statements and your introduction about he said, she said. I would much rather focus on the points that Nelson makes about we need cooperation and partnership and we need a solution to the current problem. I accept what my government has said. I cannot comment on what others are saying. That's not my role. And I think in these negotiations on Brexit, we have to be very clear. There are two parties, the European Union, of which Ireland is one of the 27, and the United Kingdom on the other side of the table, with two negotiating teams. And clearly the issue that's at stake at the moment is the question of Ireland and this invisible border. We've made progress on the financial commitments and on citizens' yeah. rights. So I think while it is perhaps interesting for you to tease out this, you know, I don't have the answers to many
sure.
of those
and
questions
I think
I do know that if we don't get over them, yeah. that we'll have much more difficult questions asked by our citizens who want solutions.
I think Maria, of course it's an interesting question and it probably would be helpful for you to say, look, let's move on to other matters. But a negotiation is about trust. A negotiation is about it being made in good faith. If the Irish government has indeed, that's why this question is of the public interest
and
needs to be fleshed out.
And I don't think you need to repeat the question to me with the greatest of respect.
Well, do you think the Irish government did issue a demand that the DUP be blocked out of this?
Absolutely not. And can I just say very clearly on this issue, and I think you're not hearing what I'm saying in relation to the negotiations. Two parties, the UK do what the UK have to do with their teams and whoever they consult, and the EU consults with its colleagues on the issues on the table. It is not for either to determine what each team does or who it speaks to. I've spoken, and I've very much welcomed my engagement with the UK colleagues around Brexit, and I think that's a good way for us to continue. So I don't think it's a question of me saying, let's move on. I think it's a question of me realising, and I hope that all of us do, and I think Nelson is also of a similar view, and I hope I'm not paraphrasing wrongly, that we have a serious issue to resolve here. But, you know, there is obviously the he said, she said, but the much more concrete issue is that we want to move on to trade talks. The UK wants that as well. We know we have to get over this hurdle of the question of Northern Ireland. I think progress was made. There were interesting statements made in the House of Commons yesterday around a UK alignment, not a Northern Ireland alignment. And I have to say, I have never said that there should be a border in the sea or elsewhere, because I don't like borders. And I think Europe is built on us not having these borders, and relationships that are very positive on the island of Ireland and between Ireland and the United Kingdom are built on the fact that we don't have strict borders, and we have come to a very good place in our relationship. And even though these are difficult moments, my view is we will get over this and we will deal with it, and our relationships will remain strong, even, as I say, in difficult moments.
How can relationships
that have been put down?
How can relationships, you see, Maria, you position that as if this is a negotiation between the British government and the Irish government and the EU.
It's not, and I haven't positioned it. I think, again, you haven't listened, and I'm going to say this one more time. This is a negotiation between the European Union of 27 and the United Kingdom government.
Okay.
May I finish? Because then I think you might question what I say, but very clearly, on finance and on citizens' rights, but particularly on the Irish question, it is very specific to the island of Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. I've come out of a meeting of our EPP group colleagues who've endorsed support for the EU position in relation to the Irish question. So I think the idea that there are a three-way discussion is not accurate, because in all of these issues there are two parties. And within that, there are specific issues that need the engagement of different players. And that will be the way when we move to the next phase, which I hope happens. I'm still optimistic, even though things are a bit difficult. I'm optimistic that we can get to the next phase, that we can all sit down at Christmas, mindful that it's been tough to get to that place, but that we'll get there because we need to move on.
Except the claim which Arlene Foster made public yesterday is that the Irish government targeted a specific political party in Northern Ireland, the DUP. that the Irish the claim is that the Irish government targeted that specific political party. If the Irish government did do that, something which it denies, but a matter which Arlene Foster, the leader of unionism in Northern Ireland, is saying the British negotiating team told them happened, then the biggest party representing unionists in Northern Ireland have been targeted by the Irish government to be excluded from a key piece of text. That is not incidental. That is not irrelevant. That needs explained.
I don't know why you're repeating that statement, and I'm sure your listeners will be frustrated with my repeating what I have said, but I do have to say it again because you have repeated it often. Your comment, not a question. I have said what the Irish government's position is on this and how the negotiations proceed. And I think you need to ask of the UK party in the negotiations how they work. Because I know on the European Union side, even here in the European Parliament, we are constantly kept up to date with those negotiations. And I think rather than try and repeat a he said, she said scenario that doesn't help. And the important questions of the day, which is how we resolve the issue of an invisible border that we all want to see continue, the people we represent. And I would say that whether you're unionist or you're in my constituency, which is bordering with Northern Ireland, people on the ground want to live their lives in harmony. They want to get on with their business. They want to go to school. They want to intermingle as they do today. That's what we're trying to ensure is continued. And I think it would be quite interesting for you to try and analyse what was said in the House of Commons yesterday. Bruce Davison made some interesting observations. The opposition spokesman from the Labour Party had some very interesting comments to make, as had David Davis. And I think if we look at what we're currently dealing with, which is an impasse that happened on Monday, you have to address the concerns. But you also have to understand that the European Union had an agreement with the United Kingdom on Monday. That appears not to be the situation of sign-off, and we have to look at how we can move it forward.
Is the Irish government prepared to compromise on the text as it was written?
I think what they've said very clearly is that the substance needs to be remain the same because the objective is where we're trying to go. But clearly a clarification is needed in terms of additional text that would help the process. I don't think anybody from the Irish side, and indeed, let me say, from the European Union side, want to block progress. We want to make progress. So, and it's how we find a wording that allows us to make progress, because we cannot stay in this situation where the Article 50 has been triggered and where we know the United Kingdom is going to leave the European Union at the end of March in 2019. So the sooner we get over this problem, and I don't underestimate it, then the sooner we will get toward a good outcome in terms of the next phase, which is both a transition and a new trading partnership, which we want to be as close as possible and as strong as possible.
OK. Nelson McCausland, do you think that would be acceptable to the DUP, that the substance remains the same, so it's just the wording that's changed a little bit for clarity?
Well, there wasn't even clarity around what was said on Monday, and different people are taking different things out of it. And that's one of the difficulties with a lot of the negotiations in this area, that there is a tendency on the part of negotiators, particularly at that higher level in Westminster, in Brussels and so on, to engage in constructive ambiguity or creative ambiguity. And that's unhelpful. Unionists want clarity and they want some certainty. And they're not unique in that, because I heard Leo Varadkar and others, in fact, I think Mairead, on an RTE programme I was on with her yesterday, made the same point that Dublin, the Irish Republic, wants clarity and certainty. But I do disagree in this regard. If it's simply what was, to most of us, the line of travel on Monday, dressed up in different language in some way or other, I think that would be unacceptable. It's not so much about terminology, although we have to avoid this creative ambiguity. What does it mean? You're back to the days of the Belfast Agreement. What does parity of esteem mean? And these are grand phrases, but it's the detail that's in them that we need to see worked out.
OK, Maria, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. Thank you.